Hello, everybody. My name's Maria Benalik, and I'm hosting today's teleclass, web training teleclass. Can I welcome you all to the rescheduled teleclass? This original date for this one was the 22nd of February, but we had to reschedule due to technical problems, I must stress, on the UK side of the Atlantic. Can I introduce today's speaker? This is Heather Loveday, and she's the director of the Richard Wells Research Centre and Centre for Evidence-Based Nursing and Midwifery at Thames Valley University in London. The centre hosts the Department of Health England, Healthcare Associated Infection Research Network, and Service User Research Forum. Heather recently took over as editor of the Journal of Infection Prevention and is a member of the Scientific Programme Committee for the annual Infection Prevention Society Conference. Heather's name is one that we know and love, and she's been a member of the ICNA and the IPS for many years, and we're really pleased to have her speaking to us today. The title of her presentation is First Steps to Dissemination, Writing for Publication and Conference Presentation. Thank you, Heather. Over to you.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. I hope that you'll find the next 40 minutes or so informative, and I hope to inspire you to actually take some of those first steps, if you haven't already done so, in terms of disseminating your work either through written publication or through conference presentation. I'm really writing, speaking about this because I'm passionate about people sharing their knowledge and learning, and the objectives for the session are to enable you to select an appropriate publication or dissemination destination for your work, to assess the suitability of the type of article you should write in terms of it being either an opinion, education, service or research output for publication, that you actually be able to think about how you might write a plan for a publication or a conference presentation, and also to just touch on some of the ethical issues that are associated with publishing and disseminating your work. I'm moving to the next slide now. So in terms of the session, I'm actually going to think about why you should publish and present at conferences, think a little bit about what journal editors and conference organisers are actually trying to get out of their delegates, thinking about the essentials, the absolute basics of writing an abstract, a paper or a poster, some hints and tips on what you should and shouldn't do in terms of style and presentation, touching on how you can make the best of peer review, and then, as I said, something around publication ethics. I'm going to use publish in a very broad sense for the rest of the presentation, and I mean dissemination of any kind, whether it be through a written journal article or whether it's through an oral presentation at a conference or a poster presentation at a conference. And moving to the next slide. So think about why we should actually publish, what drives us to publish, and why is it important as professionals in infection prevention and control that we should actually do this. If I actually asked you to brainstorm all these things on a piece of paper, I'm sure you'd probably come up with all of them. But essentially, publication, presentation, is a means of communicating what we know and what we learn through practice. And it's really important for us to do that so that we don't waste time reinventing the wheel, doing things that other people have done perfectly well that we could use off the shelf, as it were, to make sure that we can share and stimulate changes in practice where they're necessary. Perhaps importantly, to actually challenge the status quo. I think this has been really borne out in the UK over the last few years, where we've really seen that we don't have to accept the number of infections that occur, and that challenging it in a way that we can move forward has actually borne dividends, and actually sharing that information. To make sure we disseminate research and quality improvement initiatives, to help us develop our professional skills, being able to present to different types of audience is a really important skill for people who are starting out in the field, and also people who are in their sort of mid-career, being able to actually argue your case, present things in a succinct and effective way, is really very important to your professional development, and therefore helps you develop in your clinical and academic role. So moving to the next slide. So think about what you want to publish. What is it that you do that people would find of interest? And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have a huge research grant in order to be able to find things to disseminate through publication or conferences. So academic research is obviously one area that we might think about publishing in, and that might be empirical research, something you've actually conducted as a part of a higher degree, doctoral thesis, or a funded study, or even an internally generated study within your own work environment. Or it might be some secondary research that we've done, looking at secondary review of already published literature to see what we can learn from what's already been done, again, rather than reinventing the wheel. So what do we want to publish? Generally, it's something that's new. It's something that actually generates something new for our knowledge base, something that's innovatory. I quite like to think about the sorts of things that are transferable to other settings. So when I read something, I'm particularly concerned about whether or not I can use what's been learned perhaps in the research from other fields that could be applied to the field of infection prevention. And I think it's important that as we write or present, we try and think about how work in perhaps a specific context or location might actually be used by others in our specialty. Clearly, we want things to be well written and well presented. We want them to be relevant and accessible to the audience that we're actually presenting to. And they've got to be important to practice or service delivery. It's all very well having a beautifully designed research study, but if it makes no difference to what we're doing in practice, it's just a beautifully designed study. And I go back to the issue of challenging the status quo, thinking about whether or not you've read something that you want to challenge, that you have an opinion about, maybe something that there are really, if you like, equivocal answers to, so there is a point and a counterpoint type set of arguments. And also negative findings, things which don't necessarily support the current train of thought. And it used to be that negative findings rarely reached a publication destination, but that's less the case now. And if they're important negative findings, rather than negative findings because the study is being poorly designed, that's very important for us to actually read and be able to think about how that impacts on what we're doing. I'm moving to the next slide now. So in terms of thinking about where you should actually send your publication or where you actually want to think about presenting at a conference, you need to think quite carefully about where you want to go and what you want to do. There are lots of reasons where we should think about whether or not we're looking at a general or specific audience. So do we want to actually target people in our own field, or are we trying to get a message out to a much wider audience in clinical practice? And that will clearly have some impact on your selection of conferences or journals. You may also want to get your message out quickly, and one of the issues with many journals that publish pieces is that it takes a long time for you to get something from your desk to actual publication, and that becomes even worse at certain sort of points in the cycle, certainly around academic years and things like the research excellence framework that will be coming up in 2013. So time to publication is very important, and you might sort of think about publishing a letter because you want it to get in quickly rather than a large manuscript. So in terms of selecting a journal or a conference, check out the information for authors and submissions. Make sure that the structure, the focus or scope of the journal, and the word count fit what you have in mind. It's very difficult sometimes if you have a piece of doctoral work to shrink what was a very large chapter down to 2,500 words. So you need to think about word count and what can actually be accomplished through the pieces of work you're trying to get disseminated. Think about house style and the referencing systems that are used. And that's quite important when you're actually doing the work and hold, indexing your references so that you can actually put them out into different formats for different journals. Knowing what's expected can save you a lot of time later, because it's really important that you get things right, because if you send it in the wrong format, it can come back to you almost immediately saying, please change. And if you're not sure, it is worth trying to contact the editor or the sub-editors to either just ask an opinion or discuss your idea with them. Moving to the next slide. Clearly, once you've selected a destination, the way you actually frame your topic is really quite important. So much research and improvement work that we undertake can be cut much like a movie into different scenes or outputs. And it's something you should all think about when actually doing your work. Is there something that you can publish as you go along rather than waiting for the end point? And you will actually see quite frequently in journals sort of interim findings. And certainly at conferences, you're more likely to find interim findings being presented as posters and sometimes as oral presentations. In terms of thinking about cutting your work into different outputs, you need to be quite careful about plagiarising yourself, so sending the same article with a very large core to different journals. But that apart, your work is much more likely to be accepted if it matches the sort of publisher's requirements or the conference's themes. So get to know the journals that you're wanting to send things to. Take a look at the abstract books of conferences that have gone previously, and try and look at where your piece of work will actually fit. Sometimes that's quite important in terms of conference themes, because you need to think about, well, where will my piece of work on perhaps service user involvement fit in a conference around infection prevention and control? It doesn't fit in the epidemiological section, that's for sure. So you have to think quite carefully about where you might place that piece of work to ensure that it gets accepted. Look out for calls for papers and special issues for journals, and try and put those into any plan you might have for a piece of work. So while you're actually doing your work, think about, well, I will have it finished by X date, and then I'm going to target the infection prevention conference in September. I then want to have a larger publication around about January. So think about planning your, if you like, your dissemination process quite early on. And again, think about contacting editors or scientific program coordinators if you have any doubts. So if you move to the next slide, we're now starting to think about the essentials. How do I actually, I've decided what I'm going to do, I've decided where I want it to go, now I've actually sort of really got to get down to the nuts and bolts and write it in an appropriate way. So you need to think about how you would select what you read and why you read it, because that's important when thinking about who your target audience is going to be and how they're going to approach things. Most people start in a contents page and then they look at an abstract. So the title is the hook. It's really important that you get your title right. And then the abstract reels the person in. Basically, you get them hooked, they read the abstract, look at it and say, that's interesting, I'm going to read the whole thing. So think carefully about those two first pieces of information that readers will come to. Moving to the next slide. So your title, the hook. Try and keep it short, to the point, 10 or 15 words, no more than that. Really long titles lose people, you know, very soon. Make sure you use key words in your title, remembering that actually the title is one way of indexing systems filing, if you like, your article in the right place. Don't be too obscure, because that won't help them file it, and it may mean that no one ever reads your article. So ensure that you pay attention to that particular issue. Moving to the next slide. Once you've got your title and your abstract, it does give you some structure for the rest of your paper. And good structure is very much like a good map. It makes a manuscript and a poster readable. And it helps you signpost your material to readers so that they don't get lost and they know where they're going. In terms of doing this, you need to remember some simple rules, and they're about grammar and style to some extent, but rules like a paragraph should focus on a single idea, that the first line of your paragraph should tell the reader what's included in the subsequent text. And that, again, is quite important, because those of you who might speed read or scan publications or articles will actually recognize that what you do is have a quick look at the title, have a quick look at the abstract, then you actually have a quick look at every paragraph to see what they tell you. So it's quite important to, again, keep your reader in mind when you're actually structuring your work. Moving to the next slide. Structure and style are important, and you need to think about an appropriate structure for the content of the journal and for your reader. Most of us are very familiar with a scientific structure, which is introduction, methods, results, and discussion. But quite often, our work, particularly around service and quality improvement, may not necessarily fit that scientific structure, and you might want to think about other headings that will sort of get those messages across. So what's the problem? How was the problem addressed? What measurements did we take? And then you can look move on from that. Systematic reviews, obviously, again, have their own structure. They do have an introduction. They do have a methodology. But they have a slightly different approach. And letters and opinions, obviously, are very different as well. I'm going to focus a little bit on scientific structure now. So if you move to the next slide. I quite like the idea that basically a scientific structure has all the right notes. And as Eric Morcombe might say, you played all the right notes, but not necessarily in the right order. And I have to say that in some of my early writing, I actually found that that was the case. You'd find you were actually putting some of the results in the methods because they seemed to fit better there, some of the methods in the discussion because they seemed to fit better there. But you really need to be quite disciplined. And good structure requires planning, discipline, and patience. And also being quite self-critical, actually taking the opportunity to leave something alone for a little while, go back and read it, and say, actually, I need to rewrite that section because it's in the wrong place. Moving to the next slide. The beginning or the introduction is clearly important. As much as the abstract, it sets the scene and enables your reader or the people you're presenting to gain some context around what's actually being presented. So your background and context in either an oral presentation or a written piece of work should actually describe something about the setting, very briefly the literature, whether that be policy literature or scientific literature, and why your study was carried out. Why is it important? Why should the reader actually continue to read, or the listener continue to listen and not move on to another session? Sometimes we can get carried away with backgrounds and introductions, and we can try and put too much into those. Remember that some of that may actually be quite helpful in your discussion. So keep your background and context short and succinct. Moving to the next slide. Having done your introduction, you've got the middle section. So this is the meat of any article or presentation. So methods should really articulate how you went about your study, your outbreak investigation, or your review, and it should describe in some detail how participants were selected and excluded, what the intervention was, how you actually collected your data, the tools that were used. And remember that now it's quite normal for things like questionnaires or data collection tools to be available as WebExes, so they don't have to be included in the written part of the of a manuscript. You can actually publish those electronically. Important laboratory tests, measurement techniques, the statistical methods, and importantly, issues around ethical approval, consent, and issues such as that. Moving to the next slide. So having described your methodology, we're now looking at really what everyone wants to know, which is what you found, what's important about what you did. So this section also requires some discipline, and it requires you to think about what's really relevant to both articulate what the findings of the study have been, but that will also help the audience understand those. So think about relevant data rather than everything that you found. So think about descriptive and statistical data. In qualitative research, the themes and categories that may have been arrived at. And again, with qualitative research in mind, verbatim quotes, where they add to the story. It's sometimes very difficult to decide which verbatim quotes to use in an article, but they should really be used where they actually add to the story or really illustrate points quite clearly. I think qualitative research is quite difficult in terms of poster presentations at conference, and quite often people put in for an oral presentation for qualitative work and may not get that and then say, well, I can't do a poster presentation of qualitative work. But there is an opportunity to think quite creatively if you get a poster presentation for qualitative research. And you can think about using new technology such as things like sound buttons for actually getting people to record some of those quotes so that people can listen to them and use the poster to really draw out the very key themes and link those together. So don't necessarily say, I can't do qualitative work as a poster presentation. You can. Make sure you use a balance of text, tables, and figures. Don't use text to describe numbers and graphical data. They're much better presented in tables and figures. And explanatory text is very good for those, but don't rehash the numbers, as it were. And I think remember that pictures and graphs can paint 1,000 words, quite frankly, so you can actually use a graph or a table or an illustration to reduce the number of words you have to use in that particular section and perhaps use those more effectively in a discussion. Moving to the next slide. Then you get to the end, the discussion bit. And you need to think about what are the really key points from what you've achieved and what you've found out. Your findings shouldn't be over-egged. Don't turn them into something that they're not. So think quite hard about what the real outcomes are. Remember to identify for people what the strengths and weaknesses of your study were or what happened in the context of a particular service improvement initiative or happened in an outbreak investigation that perhaps could be improved or just can't be improved. There's some of the things, the barriers that you might not be able to overcome, but they should be explained. Remember, nothing's perfect, and comment on how you might actually improve the design or execution in future. Your discussion should really relate the relationship of your study to others, and it's particularly important that you highlight differences in outcomes. And as I said slightly earlier, negative findings are important. So where things don't match the current science or schools of thought, highlight those and ask questions about them in terms of your methodology and why they might be important going forward. Really important at some point in your discussion, very clearly, to highlight what the implications of your work are for practitioners, managers, and policymakers. And if there aren't any, you might actually question whether or not it's worth publishing. But it's really important that you set that context. Remember that you as a practitioner, the managers that are in your organisation, and certainly policymakers, don't necessarily read every journal. They certainly don't attend every conference. And so it's important that you're actually able to highlight those things really clearly so that they'll get picked up. And then identify any further research priorities that might exist. Moving to the next slide. Turn my page. I'm going to get on a little bit to just style, and I hope I'm not teaching you to suck eggs, but as an editor, it's really quite helpful if people think about style as they're presenting their work for publication. And I also think as a sort of a conference goer, style's really important in terms of the way you present an oral presentation, how you engage your audience, and those sorts of things are really quite important. So clarity is absolutely essential. Short words, short sentences, and paragraphs that are really very focused on single ideas. In vocabulary, use jargon where it's needed, but avoid it, you know, where you can. Using plain English is always the best answer. Being able to distill your work into things which are very clear and lacking in jargon is very important, and it's particularly important for managers and policymakers who may not be familiar with the jargon, and we just lose them because we're not able to get our ideas and our findings over in an articulate way. Try and limit the use of abbreviations. I know it's very useful when we have something like healthcare-associated infections to be repeated constantly throughout an article, but think about limiting the abbreviations because they do make it quite difficult to read articles. And try and avoid slang, and definitely avoid cliche. In terms of coherence, make sure that as well as a structure, you have some logical development, particularly to your discussion. So try and think about the steps in developing your argument. And remember that the first and last sentences of a paragraph are really very helpful for signposting and telling people what's actually been said in the previous paragraph. I'm just going to talk a little bit about posters now, because if you move to the next slide, posters are often the way we all start to disseminate our work. We get quite frightened about producing 3,000 to 4,000 words of well thought out text for a journal. We get a little bit scared about perhaps standing up in front of an audience of 400 to 500 of our peers. But we seem to be fairly comfortable with the idea of developing a poster and presenting it. And so in terms of that, I think there's some things that we can actually think about specifically around posters. A lot of conferences follow the same format in terms of introduction, methods, results, and discussion for the abstracts that you put in for a poster. But that doesn't then mean that you have to be limited to a very texty poster once you've been accepted. So think that the poster should actually catch the attention of the viewer or the conference delegate. And that's because quite often there are far more posters at a conference than there are oral presentations. And people go through the conference handbooks marking the posters that they think they want to go and see. So go back to that sort of, if you like, that mantra, which is that the title and the abstract are really important. So the hook and the reel for your post are just as important as they are for a written manuscript. A poster should quickly acquaint the viewer with the basics of your subject and the basics of your findings. And that's again because they may well be trying to get through hundreds of posters in a lunchtime, and actually being able to pick up key points in something like 3 to 5 minutes is pretty important, because that means they can achieve quite a lot in their lunch hour going around the poster sessions. They should also make the viewer want to learn more. One thing about poster sessions is that you should always be where you can by your poster to discuss it. It's a real opportunity for you to share what you've learnt in a very almost intimate way with the viewers. It's much nicer than talking to 500 people, you can get a real dialogue going around how other people work, and you can learn from it as well. So you want, basically what you want to do with a poster is catch someone's attention and then hang on to them for a few minutes so that you can actually share and discuss what you've done. Moving to the next slide. This slide actually is about design essentials, and I've done it deliberately this way to try and highlight some of the issues around a poster. So things like size and orientation, crowded and cluttered posters, a bit like this slide, should be avoided. Your poster should stimulate discussion, not give a long presentation. And I'll let you continue to read those because they're very similar to some of the things I've talked about. If you actually turn to the next slide, you'll see the sorts of things I'm trying to illustrate. So size and poster orientation. Check that it's portrait or landscape. There's nothing worse than getting to a conference and finding that you've got a landscape poster and all the poster boards are portrait, because it hangs over the end, it doesn't look professional, and it curls around. Avoid crowded and cluttered posters, and make sure it can be read from a distance. If their poster galleries are actually quite crowded, people may be standing 3 feet away or more actually trying to look at things. So moving to the next slide, I've actually given you a sample of a poster, which is hugely wordy. I can guarantee that actually the words were a lot larger when they were on the poster, because it was very large. But this is the sort of poster that is very text-oriented. Gets its message across, but actually takes quite a long time for someone to read through. And actually has fairly clear signposting, but you might say, well, I'm not that struck by it. If you then move to the next slide, think about the issues of stimulating discussion. It's not a Lord of the Rings volume. It's not a marathon presentation. 5 minutes at the most. Text to a minimum. Graphics, charts, graphs, and photos. And use simple font and font sizes that can be read, and use bold type to ensure that it's legible. And then if you move to the next slide, you actually see what I mean. So this is a similar poster, but it's very clearly laid out. There are short, sharp boxes for people to read. And if the person was actually standing by this poster, you'd have lots of things that you're actually able to discuss. There's good signposting, and the little speech boxes at the bottom, if you actually can read the purple oval, it says remove panels to hear surf members' experiences. So this actually uses an innovative technology so that people can actually listen to service users talking about being involved in the development of research. So it's not boring, and it does mean that people can actually hear from the horse's mouth. Okay. Moving to the next slide. This is where I can do a plug for the Infection Prevention Society's conference in September this year. The call for abstracts is out. You could be developing your poster now. There are lots of themes within the conference that you could actually be putting your work into. So I'm just giving it a plug at the moment. So put it in your diary, look at registering, and certainly think about putting in an abstract for either an oral free paper session or a poster session? Moving to the next slide. There are a few hurdles, I think, in writing to publication. And some of those are certainly around deciding when you should be an author on a paper and when other people should be authors on your papers. So there are some very clear guidelines from the International Committee of Medical Journal Editors that clearly stipulate the basis upon which authorship should be contributed. The first is that an author should be involved in the ideas, the design or analysis and interpretation of data, that they should be involved in drafting or revising the manuscript for its intellectual content, and that they must give final approval for the version that's to be published. So there are three key elements: be involved in designing it, be involved in writing it up for publication or presentation, and be involved in approving the final manuscript. Those are not things, you can't just do one of those. And for those people who are perhaps writing for the first time, it's really useful to write with an experienced colleague. It may be very helpful for you to write with your academic supervisor if it's a dissertation or a doctoral thesis that you're looking at publishing parts of. It helps to have other input, and it can actually ensure that you put together a very well-crafted presentation or manuscript. So think about who should be involved in authorship, but also make sure that either you, if you're an author, or the people who are contributing to your papers actually do the work that's required to have authorship assigned. In the next slide, just a few words about peer review. We can quite often be frightened of peer review, I think. Journals generally send their manuscripts off to two or three independent reviewers. Conferences will send abstracts out for marking to a minimum of two reviewers. And they have criteria against which they then comment and grade papers. And the purpose of peer review is actually to provide a perspective on the quality of the work that's been written up in an objective way, but you have to remember that there also will be some subjectivity involved and sort of, if you like, almost accept that that's there. But when you get the comments back, really trying to learn from what people have said. The benefits of peer review is that it nearly always, I haven't yet found an example of when it doesn't improve what I've done, certainly. I think getting the perspective of others who are perhaps not quite as close to the work is extremely valuable. And in some ways, you can build that into your preparation process by having people read manuscripts or comment on presentations before you actually give them, because they quite often say something along the lines of, well, did you think of X, or I don't quite understand the point you're putting there. Perhaps if you explained it in a slightly different way, it will come over as a bit more positive. So really, really think very carefully about what you get back from peer review, and don't take it as criticism. Take it as being help in making your manuscript the best manuscript it can possibly be. So think about the fact that the benefit comes from improving what's published rather than, if you like, sorting out the wheat from the chaff. That's a quotation from Richard Smith of the British Medical Journal. If you turn to the next slide, another hurdle is really thinking about conflict of interest. And just as a part of thinking about publication ethics, conflict of interest exists when you as an author have an affiliation that's not transparent to the reader or the editor, but that actually may affect impartiality. So the rule is always declare a conflict of interest, and that being transparent about it is better than being embarrassed about it later on. So if your study has been partially funded by a commercial organisation, be very clear that that's the case. If that is the case, be clear that they have no ability to actually influence your results and go forward from there. But always declare it and be transparent about who has and hasn't funded studies. Not necessarily just funding of studies. It may be that you're an advisor to a particular company, or that you're involved in a particular society or organisation that are also involved in some of the research. So think about those. It's not always financial conflict of interest that we're concerned about. If you move to the next slide, that just highlights that if you want to look at this a little further, you can go to the COPE guidelines, which are available on the website that I've given on this slide. And it's well worth having a look at those to rehearse what is and isn't acceptable. I suppose this is where I get the point to do another plug if you move to the next slide, and that is to highlight how the Journal of Infection Prevention might be a destination for some of your work. Those of you who are IPS members will know that it's a bi-monthly publication. It comes every 2 months, and it's a balance of science and professional issues. The journal is blind peer-reviewed, so everything that is submitted is peer-reviewed by at least two reviewers, sometimes more, depending on whether or not it's a particularly specialist area. The journal is indexed by CINAHL and Scopus, and it welcomes manuscripts from colleagues internationally that have got relevance to UK practice. The journal needs its members to actually submit work to ensure that we're actually meeting the needs of the membership and sharing that knowledge and experience that exists within the society. If you turn to the next page, there is always a call for papers. We're very interested in research and surveillance, be that original research or and short reports, systematic reviews, quality improvement, patient safety and audit articles. Scientifically designed product evaluations are welcomed. And then some of the professional issues, CPD topics, issues around learning and teaching, things that are to do with the management of infection prevention and control, so commissioning, very popular at the moment to sort of think and talk about, strategic directions, regulation and governance, really welcome opinion and letters, comments on papers that have appeared in the previous issues or that comment on current issues and areas of discussion. I know most of you out there have got the most fantastic photo library of pictures of ghastly basements and equipment, etc. There is a section in the journal that you can actually use those photos and just write a very short piece about what it was, how you found it, what impact it had on practice. You don't have to declare where you're necessarily working. And then there's the opportunity for some of the quirkier, more light-hearted elements that are contained in Ipsis, which is at the end of the journal. So I would encourage you to write for publication and consider JIP as a first destination for your work, but also think very clearly and carefully about where you actually want to target your audience. It may be that you're not looking at a specialist audience, but you're looking for a more general audience, and other journals may be better for that. So thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much, Heather. I'd like to thank you for that really interesting presentation. I'm sitting here getting myself fired up about what can I put on a poster for the IPS conference in September. So I hope you've had the same impact on other people. I'd just like to reiterate one or two of the things that you've said. Having been a judge of the poster competition at conference before, it's great to see the numbers and the quality of the posters produced by our members and other people, and I'd really encourage everyone to get on board if they possibly can, to think about either collaboratively or individually presenting work that they're doing out there, because I'm sure there's an awful lot of stuff going on out there that they could share with us. And also one or two key points that I picked up, keywords, discipline and planning, but also that there's people out there like yourself who will help. And there's a lot of people who are prepared to help bring people on and move us all forward in the role of publication. I'm sure you'd agree with that, Heather.
No, absolutely. And I particularly would say that for, if you like, people who have only ever dipped their toe in the water and thought about it. So first, novice authors, people who maybe have only written their dissertation and not really thought about writing for publication, you know, if they let us know, then we can help them plan things. Or if they send the manuscripts in and then need review, we can actually sort of then actually put them in touch with a, if you like, an experienced author who may be able to help them on the right road.
So let's hope then, with all that in mind, that we get lots and lots of free papers and lots of poster proposals for the conference in September.
Absolutely.
Right, well, can I just thank you then, Heather, formally for that. And it's been a really enjoyable conference. And thank you all, Heather, thank you for presenting. And the rest of you, thank you all very much for listening. Bye.